From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last month on Election Day in the town of Pittsford. Voters in Pittsford were choosing a supervisor and two town board members. It had been a rather spirited campaign. One of the contentious issues had been the debate over a plan for future housing. Two town board members had pushed for a plan to address what they called a long-standing problem in Pittsford, the lack of diversity, both racially and socioeconomically. But that plan was defeated, and so Democrats had hoped to win the election, a way to keep that agenda alive. On the town board, they had some success. Democrats won one of the two open seats, flipping control from the Pittsford Republicans. Now it is going to be 3-2 in favor of the Democrats on the board. But at the top of the ticket, Supervisor Bill Smith won a comfortable re-election, easily defeating Democrat Kendra Evans by more than 15 points. We had the chance to speak to Evans during the campaign, but this is our first opportunity in quite some time to sit down with the supervisor. We're talking about not only the campaign, but the future of one of the county's most prosperous towns. Bill Smith, welcome back, and congratulations on your re-election. Thank you for being
here. Evan, thank you. It's good to be with you today.
Now, what I'd like to do is not spend too much time on an issue that may not have much legs going forward, or maybe I'm wrong about that. With the Democratic control of the town board going forward, I wonder if you think your job's about to get more difficult. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't know. I know that the newest member of our town board campaigned explicitly on the statement, I don't want to change things in Pittsford. And I have no reason to believe that she would not live up to what she presented to the voters. And if that, in fact, is her intention, that will sit well with the great majority of our residents in Pittsford who love the place and like the way it's run.
Do you think your election and the margin of your election confirmed your sentiment that by and large, Pittsford needs to stay the way it is?
Well, it depends what you mean, stay the way it is. I mean, I campaigned on basically what I've been doing for the last 6 years as supervisor, which is on a platform of continual improvement. Because, yes, we want the quality of life in Pittsford to remain at the level it is. We want the standard of services to remain at the level they are. We want the satisfaction of our residents to remain at the level it is and get even better. But to do that requires change. To do that requires continual improvement across the board. And that's what we've been doing for 6 years, and there's more of it in the future.
Were you surprised by the margin of your victory?
I was not. Based on the reception I had at the door throughout the campaign, I felt fairly confident and had predicted privately to friends that I felt it was going to be somewhere around 60-40, plus or minus 2 or 3 points in either direction. And, you know, I've campaigned for office enough that I think at this point, I guess I can tell the difference between someone just being polite at the doorstep or saying what they need to say to get you off their doorstep and someone who's really expressing sincerely held sentiment when they say we really like the way things are run in Pittsford.
Well, here's an email from that. We actually got a pile of emails in advance of your arrival. David in Pittsford writes the following. Evan, I consider myself a political centrist. I live in Pittsford. Ultimately, I respect what the Democrats are trying to do, but I voted for Bill Smith because I think he has been a good steward of finances and the environment. He cares about parks and green space. I'd love to see more diversity in our town, but I'm not sure that's possible in the short term. And congratulations to him. That's from David in Pittsford. Mm-hmm. Did you hear a lot of that in your campaign?
I certainly heard a lot of elements of that. I mean, we've been very proactive on the sustainability and the environmental front. I mean, and on preservation of green space, this was the issue that first got me involved in municipal government back in the mid-1990s when there were the new supervisor at the time, my predecessor, Supervisor Carpenter, came up with this visionary plan for the Green Print to preserve what at that time was 2/3 of the remaining open farmland in Pittsford from development. And when we had a vacancy on the town board back in 1995, I ran for that because I thought this Green Print is a good idea and I want to support it.
Bill, what is accomplishment number one, though, when you think about the margin you just won re-election, and we'll talk about all the things that animated some of the public debate, but you ultimately you won easily. Why do you think that is? What's number one reason for that?
I think the number one reason was maintaining the quality of life and the quality of our services in the town. And the demonstrated ability to be able to work with our municipal partners, our school board, our school superintendent, our village government. I was very pleased, not terribly surprised, but I was pleased to see that in the election, I carried the village, both districts in the village. And traditionally, years gone by, 10 years ago or more, there had been not so good relations between the town government and the village government. And It's really been the opposite since I've been in office.
Do you generally believe that's because when you get down to the granular local level, it's not really about partisan views of politics?
You are absolutely right about that. I mean, in my mind, it's a tragedy that, you know, other states have it. In New York, we don't. Where the municipal elections should be nonpartisan elections. They should be like school board elections in the towns. Unfortunately, they're not. You have to have the nomination of one party or another to be able to run. However, once in office, you can conduct yourself in what I think of as a postpartisan way. And these great partisan differences that we see at the national level and that have so corroded our civic discourse and the national level and the state level, those things just don't apply at the local level. And you can work with people who share with you a commitment to the rule of reason to do the right things for our residents.
So let's talk about some of the issues that were the most animating. And I want to make sure that we understand when we talk about the housing issue.
Mm-hmm.
For those who aren't, you know, who might think, well, this is sort of an esoteric inside baseball town issue, the part of the reason I think this matters is because of the way it became a question on whether it's a referendum on socioeconomic diversity, racial diversity. But let's talk first about what the actual plan was, because as it was described to me, you know, 90% or so of the available space for housing is sort of spoken for. You don't have a whole lot left for housing.
That's about right. You're right about that. Among builders and among planning professionals, they call it build out. How close are you to build out?
Yeah.
And it's actually about 91% is already built out in Pittsburgh.
Okay. And so Democrats on the town board had created this idea that, well, you can create new housing, and it wasn't really for people at the poverty line. I think the income, the targeted income they had sort of scoped out for was about $53,000 to $93,000, which might be more than some towns experience, but for Pittsburgh, that's on the lower side of the income scale. And it, as far as we could tell from the outside, created quite an uproar. How did you see? Is that a fair way to describe it? Why don't you kind of explain what you perceive there?
Yeah, I don't think it created very much of an uproar at all among the residents of Pittsburgh. I think that, there are advocates who maybe didn't understand what the conditions actually are in Pittsburgh, who were outside the town, who were very animated about this, and one member of the town board who brought this up. Look, at the risk of shattering some cherished stereotypes, let me share with you some information about affordability of housing in Pittsburgh, okay? 26% of all the available houses in Pittsburgh are valued at $199,000 or less. Almost half of all the houses in Pittsburgh, 48%, are valued at $249,000 or less. There are about 1,000 apartment and condo units available in the town outside the village. Within the village, 26% of all the available housing is rental housing. And when I talk about apartments being available, I'm not talking about the situation in Manhattan where you have to wait till somebody dies to be able to get the apartment. You could go down this afternoon after you finish your broadcast today and walk home with a lease on an apartment in Pittsburgh. So the idea that there's not affordable housing in Pittsburgh is not true. The fact is people are affording it. And if you do the arithmetic, so if you take those houses, the 25%, the 26% that's less than $199,000, say you had $180,000 house. If you do all the arithmetic about, assume a 10% down payment and what a person would have to pay, factoring in all the costs and the STAR exemption and the rest of it, that is within the means, depending upon which multiple you use of, you know, which percentage of gross income that you devote to housing. But by any of the conventional rules of thumb, that is affordable by people making in the $60,000 to $70,000 a gross income bracket. And if you go down further, $150,000 house, which are available in the town of Pittsburgh, in good neighborhoods, somebody making in the 40,000s is gross income can afford that. Now, it's more competitive to find those places in Pittsburgh than other places. But the fact is, people are doing it and they're moving in all the time.
You don't have, first of all, to be clear here, it's still the wealthiest town in the county, right?
I think that's true, and I certainly think that by measures such as median income and the median house price. So to be sure, I mean these housing prices I'm talking about are higher than in other communities. There's no doubt about that. Maybe you've heard of. I've never in my life heard of any city in the United States or in any Western country, for that matter, where there is not either within that city or immediately surrounding it one place, maybe two, that are known as the affluent place, the place where the houses are more expensive. That is appears to be part of life.
I think the stereotype is your whole town is like that, and you're pushing back against that.
I'm pushing back against that stereotype, yes, for the you know, the reasons I've just stated.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the diversity of the actual racial diversity in the town, there's not much. Fair?
Well, it depends. You know, maybe somewhere, Evan, there is a wise philosopher who has the answer to the question, what is the perfect ethnic mixture? What is the perfect mixture of religions? What is the perfect mixture of occupations that make the ideal community? When we find such a person, maybe he can or she can advise me, and we can see if it's within the scope of the powers of town government to do anything about it. I know that we have about 88% white, we have about 9% Asian, and about 2% African-American, and the rest represent other ethnic backgrounds.
Okay. And so you seem to be sort of continuing the theme that I heard you say during the campaign, which is essentially that, you know, it's tricky for government to try to choose an exact racial makeup of a town and try to engineer that.
Well, I think it is tricky. I think it's difficult. I mean, on one level, human history is replete with examples of governments trying to do that, and the results are very often far less than encouraging, to say the least. At the most benevolent end of the scale, you know, I've talked to builders. I've talked to developers and builders about this, and they say, look, you cannot correlate. For the most part, you cannot correlate housing prices, at least in the price ranges that we can afford to build, with ethnic outcomes. It really depends on the towns you're talking about. People have different choices and like different kinds of places.
Why do you think there's only 2% African Americans in Pittsford?
I don't know why. I don't know why. I think this is simply the way the housing has panned out over time.
But you don't think that redlining in the 40s, 50s, 60s and economic dispossession of African Americans had anything to do with that?
Well, I think that all of those factors are relevant. But you asked me about in Pittsford.
Sure.
And those factors are present anywhere in the United States, really, for the most part. And those are not factors that are limited to Pittsford. So to the extent that there was redlining in Pittsford or that there were restrictive deeds decades ago.
Black families weren't allowed to buy certain houses in Pittsford.
Apparently that's true if you look at some if what we hear about these deed restrictions are true. So those are factors that prevailed pretty much everywhere until thankfully they were done away with.
Yeah, right. And I guess what I'm trying to understand is if in the 40s, 50s, 60s, you had, for example, black families moving up from the South, thinking there's opportunity, Kodak, manufacturing, chance to create a new life, and you had economic dispossession, you had redlining, you had mortgage fraud, and then when families lost their homes and they were told, well, now you have to go live here, sort of the white power structure said, you got to go live in these segregated city neighborhoods. And that's where you go. And that's where we have a concentration of people now who are African American. And we don't really have a whole lot of diversity in the suburbs because they never really had an open door there to begin with. Do you disagree with that?
I think that may be an argument of limited applicability. Again, I don't think it's specific to Pittsford. I think that especially in the 40s, 50s and 60s, you know, this was it was on the cusp and in the early days of the promotion of suburbanization in America post-World War II. But for at least half of that time or more, people simply wanted to live closest to where they worked. And the idea of commuting or coming in from a suburb for much of that time was still something of a second best choice.
I guess so when I hear you talk about social engineering and government should sort of stay out of that, the response of people like your colleagues on the town board who are Democrats, people like Kevin Beckford, who was on this program a couple of months ago, said that we had social engineering. It was redlining, it was economic dispossession. And so a response to that now is appropriate. Do you disagree with that?
Well, the appropriate response now is to make sure that we provide a way of life and the services and the quality of life in our town that is attractive to anyone and everyone.
Okay. Are you concerned that in our society, because of the results of those decades that are still with us today, Black families have a lot less generational wealth and therefore fewer opportunities to move to places like this?
As you look at the history of our country, you have to look at these things and regret that they ever happened. And, what we are left with is the situation on the ground today. Before we could do anything that would be effective to make a change in that, we would have to have some idea of what we can do that would actually work. And I don't think we're there.
Okay.
And not just Pittsburgh, but anywhere else.
Okay. So is there a role for government at all in this area then?
There could be. There could be, to the extent that you are willing to correlate income level with ethnicity. And there are some serious questions about that. But to the extent that you consider that viable, then if a municipality were willing to subsidize in one form or another particular kinds of housing, then you could bring at least that about. What you could – a government cannot dictate – what the ethnicity is of people who live in any given neighborhood, what it could do and what some places have tried to do has been to subsidize certain low-income housing. And where that's been tried, it's been pretty much a mixed bag in terms of what comes out of it, in terms of the distance between the intended result and the actual result.
And so is it then therefore your view that at least right now, from what we've seen, that would be the options for government, there aren't tools that you see that have worked?
There may be tools. First of all, I don't claim to have undertaken a complete review of where this has been tried everywhere. I am aware of examples where this has been tried and it has had a knock-on effect. For example, out west, where they have a lot of room and they can do a lot of advanced planning, not a place that's already 90% built out. Where they have been able to say, set aside, okay, we have this new development and we're setting aside, 5% or 10%, and this is going to be lower income housing, and this is, in effect, is going to be subsidized by the other people who move into that development because their housing will be commensurately higher to make up the difference. So what you have is a small core of that 5 or 10% that's lower, and now you've had the effect of making the other remaining housing more expensive, not less expensive, because they're subsidizing that small number of units.
Okay. You referenced some of the town. Well, your view that this wasn't really as hot button issue that it was maybe portrayed in the media. So I'll give you sort of a softball, a blunt one here. Mm-hmm. Do you think the media makes more of these issues than the people in your town do?
I think the media, it's my impression that the media is intensely interested in any issue having to do with differences among people, whether they are religious differences, ethnic differences, differences in income.
Okay. Is that appropriate?
It's not for me to say what's appropriate for the media to do. I have no complaints with it. I sit back and I observe, and this is my observation.
Okay. You're going to be working with the board with three Democrats, though, as you say, your observation during the campaign was one of the Democrats running seemed to be using the rhetoric that would indicate maybe not a large departure from what you're used to working with on the board. But if they vote as a bloc, it's going to be a little bit perhaps of an issue? Could it be an issue for you to get things done?
Let me just take a step back for a second.
Sure.
And say this, that, it's more than just what one person said in the campaign. I mean, we have had a bipartisan town board for the last 2 years, and I think that we have moved forward successfully working together in a great bipartisan or nonpartisan, or if you want to use my term, postpartisan model of municipal government. In the entire 2 year period, except for one occasion, there was no occasion in which there was ever a vote of the town board that divided strictly on party lines. So I think that tells you something about the—
What was the one occasion?
The one occasion was the proposal to change, to add this housing issue to our comprehensive plan. Yes. And of course, there were other reasons why that was not appropriate for our comprehensive plan. That was brought in at the last minute, at the end of what was almost a 5-year public process. And I emphasize the word public on the public process, every element of which had been thoroughly vetted through public workshops and public participation. And this began with a proposal that actually I was interested in, which was responding to the expressed desire by residents for senior housing, housing of types more or desired by people in their senior years, at somewhat more affordable rates than we have now. And there are certain things that you can do in terms of zoning laws with smaller setbacks, smaller lot sizes, some practical things like that, that can make housing of this type available at somewhat lower price points. And I wanted to, that was already in our comprehensive plan draft, but I wanted to throw in, I had an amendment to give some examples of precisely how that could be done. And what my colleague on the town board had the idea of, well, saying, no, this should not be limited to senior housing. This should be across the board. And a comprehensive plan is supposed to be the expression of the choices and vision of the broad consensus of the community. And one of the reasons that, we got around to vetting the comprehensive plan in its final version at the time of year we did was because we as a town board earlier in the year made a commitment that we would take into account the results of our community survey in looking at issues, affecting the comprehensive plan. So not only had this proposal been brought in at the 11th hour out of the blue, where it completely bypassed the public process, which had been open for 5 years for anybody to bring in their ideas that could then have been weighed and put forth before the public in an organized way, as we did in the public workshops. This bypassed that process, and it was contrary to the clear expression of our residents in our community survey.
Given the results of the election, do you feel that your easy reelection was a rejection of part of that effort on the housing?
Well, I have to think that in part it was. I don't think that fully explains it. I think that really a stronger factor was simply the feeling that was expressed to me over and over by voters at the door of all parties, frankly. They love the way things are in Pittsford. They love the way town government runs things, and they want to keep it that way.
Did the election of a Democrat validate some of your colleagues on the town board who wanted that housing change?
You'll have to ask them whether it validates that in their mind. I don't know. I mean, the town board seats were all squeakers.
And it was very close.
Whereas the supervisor race was most assuredly not.
That's a fair description of it. I mean, it was very, very close among the four candidates on the town board. And when it comes to what may happen now, I'm curious to get your take, at least whether you think Mr. Beckford is describing his goals in good faith. On this program, he talked about a conversation he had with you, trying to find consensus or compromise, to at least say to you, what would it take to get you on board? What can we give you? What can we offer you? How do we come together on this? Let's listen to some of what he said about his conversation with Supervisor Smith, and we'll see if Supervisor Smith thinks it was fair.
Your amendment is for folks that are senior citizens that can afford $500,000 home. I believe that's too exclusive. I want us to be more inclusive. And so what do you need? And there wasn't anything. And I said, well, it bothers me the fact that we have 2% African-American that live here today, because that's a direct result of segregationist policies that started before you and I got here. But now that we're here, I believe we're mandated to fix it. And his belief was, he says, I don't believe it's our role to fix it. He says, I don't believe we should socially engineer diversity.
Is that fair?
I don't recall the specifics of the conversation. I can tell you that I do think that government, especially a local municipal government, has very little power at its disposal to take actions that would result in what my colleague is describing as his desired outcome. I think our role is to make sure that people understand that this is a welcoming and inclusive community, and we certainly have done this over and over and over, especially since, we had a couple of incidents starting in 2016 where people, and I will always be quick to point out, from outside the town, came in with racist literature or racist stickers they put up on some telephone poles, some places, and we spoke out clearly and definitively that we are a place that welcomes everybody. And you know, I should also add this. Kevin and I and another member of our board, we actually met during the campaign with at the request of a group of people who are immigrants to this country and who themselves experienced oppression where they came from, and came here with nothing. And they're all Pittsford residents, and they all have skin of a different color, and they all have English as a second language and various levels of proficiency in it. And all of them talked about starting from nothing and making sacrifices early on, and they worked and earned and saved. And by the time their children were approaching school age, they were able to afford houses in Pittsford. And this is a very common phenomenon that we see, that people, look, especially when you're young, I mean, a lot of young people, I'm not just going from my own experience, but I've certainly felt this way. I know a lot of young people do. They want to live in a big city, or they want to be in a more urban environment. You don't want to go to a suburb when you're right out of college at 22 or 23, or at least a lot of people don't. I went to New York. My son is in Boston now, so I understand what he wanted to do. And I think a lot of young people are that way. But there comes a time when you do think about having maybe a more settled existence, and then you look for a suburb to live in. And by that point, you've worked for a while and you've saved some money.
Let me read a couple of the comments you made during the campaign about what makes Pittsford special.
Yes.
You said, Pittsford affordability is always going to be higher than affordability any place in the surrounding area. And the reason is because Pittsford is such a great place to live. People are willing to pay a premium to live here. You said that to 13 Wham.
Right.
And you were asked about, well, what does affordable housing mean? Because some listeners hear you say, well, anything under 199 or 150 or whatever the case may be. Affordable is sort of a subjective term, and it's a moving target for different people. You wrote, you told 13 Wham, there's affordable housing very close to us where people can live nearby and still participate in public events, enjoy our parks, and enjoy our trails. So it sounds like what you're saying is what makes your town special is going to make it more expensive, but that doesn't mean that you still feel like it is exclusive or not welcoming.
Well, that's right. And let me begin by referring to the second of the 2 points you
sure.
made was part of a larger issue.
Yeah.
It was this. If we lived in a place where there was no housing that was within reasonable striking distance for, you know, middle-class people or people other than the very wealthy, I think it would be a very different conversation about in each of the towns, not just Pittsford, about what we might need to do in terms of housing and housing affordability. But the point I was making at that stage was that this is not like the exclusive enclaves of the East Coast or of the West Coast either. This is not a Greenwich, Connecticut. This is not a Bedford, New York. This is not a Princeton, New Jersey. This is not a place where you are a two-hour commute away from any housing that you could consider affordable. There is affordable housing. It's right here in Pittsford, and it's in, if I dare say, it's also in our neighboring communities, too.
Should people who are living close to the poverty line be able to afford to live in Pittsford?
I don't know if there are any rules or any principles that govern whether people of any income level should or should not be.
But they probably can't afford it right now,
well,
right?
Probably they can't. I mean, there are lots of things that... how is this different than anything else in life? You can afford those things that your income makes you capable of affording. So to the person who says, well, you know, you don't have housing that somebody can graduate from college and buy a house in Pittsford right away. Well, I suppose that's true for most people. I suppose it's also true for them that their first car is not going to be a Rolls Royce.
And so how about the question of taxes? Rachel says, Evan, if you can afford a $150,000 house in Pittsford, you probably still can't afford the taxes. Your guest doesn't seem to mention that. The taxes discriminate. Do the taxes discriminate?
No, the figures that I gave when I cited some housing costs and I talked about the all-in inclusive costs, those included the taxes on the house. School taxes, town taxes, property taxes, everything, in terms of what the monthly carrying costs would be for the house. So, yes, taking taxes into account, those houses in Pittsford are, in fact, affordable.
Okay. Affordable for who, though?
Well, affordable in the cases I cited for people making anywhere between about $43,000 and about between $43,000 and $70,000 a year, depending upon where the house is, whether it's $150,000, whether it's $180,000.
Okay. And another listener living in Pittsford says there does seem to be a racial component at times. The proposed apartment complex at Monroe at the Canal and the Village of Pittsford had a racial bias aspect. Some opponents didn't want it, even though it was built on a former brownfield, because, quote, those people might move in. Did you ever hear a rhetoric like that?
I never heard racial rhetoric having to do with either of those proposed sites. What people seem to have objected to for both sites is, especially in the case of the Village proposal, it's been in litigation for some years, and that's under the jurisdiction of the Village government, not the town government, has been the scale and mass and traffic issues. And, of course, everybody always invokes traffic when they don't want something built. But at this particular spot, right by the railway tracks, at a little bottleneck, that does seem to be a very problematic issue that would have to be dealt with if that were built.
At least on that, and I'm not an expert on this, I can confirm that. Mm-hmm. I've been in traffic there.
Yeah.
So I certainly do understand.
Yeah, and the other project you talked about, I think people were concerned that that was so close to one of our colleges. We have two colleges in Pittsford, that it basically would end up becoming student housing, and people were concerned about that. Although I think we have a lot of students who rent property in Pittsford during their college years, and if it's been a particular problem, it's not a problem that's ever been brought to my attention.
So let's put a bow on housing, and then in our second half here, we're going to talk more about the way you see the next 2 years in your term here. Do you think the Democrats now can revive this housing issue, or is it done?
I suppose they could if they wanted to. They would have to get past me and a great majority of our residents. That's really up to them.
Would it surprise you to come back up? You think it would be a mistake for it to come back up?
I think it would, yes, because it's fairly extravagantly out of sync with the expressed intention and desire of a big majority of our residents.
Okay. And then the last one on the housing is just this, because what I want to do is I always want to be able to have a conversation in good faith. I know the campaign focused a lot on this. I didn't want to sort of hit this subject in a way that was unfair to you. You won comfortable re-election in a town that has obviously appreciated the work that you're doing. Do you think now that, given the fact that there used to be these covenants on these deeds, et cetera, is there anything that should be done about if there were specific properties? You know, Justin Murphy in the Democrat and Chronicles reported on properties like that. I think he's writing a book about it in Rochester. So is there anything in your mind that will bear analysis in regards to redlining, specific deed restrictions, et cetera? Or is it your view that we're turning the calendar into 2020. Those deed restrictions don't exist anymore. We are as inclusive as we can be. Anyone's welcome to be here. And if you can afford to live here, we want you to live here. Is that essentially the disposition?
I don't think that's essentially a disposition, no. I mean, I do think we have to recognize that the kind of deed restrictions we're talking about have been utterly void as a matter of law and unenforceable for over 50 years.
So do we talk about them too much?
I don't know if we talk about them too much or not. I do believe, as a student of history, that we need to understand our history in order to understand our present and in order to be able to plan for our future. So to say that we just pull a curtain on this and say, okay, we don't have to think about this anymore, no, I think that's wrong. But I think that in terms of being the tail that wags the dog going forward, that's not a very useful way of going forward, given that these restrictions have been void and outlawed for five decades or more.
And would you also say that even when government has the best of intentions, its efforts to change outcomes don't always find success?
Well, that's true across the board, but with specific reference to...
I'm not just talking about housing.
Absolutely.
That's how your general view of government.
Well, I think so. I mean, government is a human institution, and human beings are capable of making mistakes, and therefore governments will make mistakes and will not always be able to foresee unintended consequences, which is why I think that when you follow the approach to government that we have followed in Pittsford for a very long time, including the past 2 years of a successful bipartisan municipal government. If you follow the rule of reason and if you follow doing what is in the best interests of our residents and in compliance with their expressed wishes, you do the best job that you can.
My guest is the town supervisor of Pittsford, Bill Smith, who won a comfortable re-election on Election Day just about a month ago, more than 15 points, after a spirited campaign. And after our only break, we're going to talk about more about how he sees the next 2 years, what the priorities will be, and much more with Bill Smith next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about non-smokers' lung cancer. Sometimes we see a headline or a story, a tragic loss, and it seems like an outlier, an occurrence that seems almost impossible for people who don't smoke. But those numbers are on the rise, and doctors are very concerned about that. We're going to talk about what we know, treatment, and more next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bill Smith is the supervisor of the town of Pittsford. What is first? It's sort of an interesting question. I would say, what is first on your 2020 agenda? But you've been town supervisor there for how long now?
I'll be finishing my sixth year at the end of this year.
So yes. It's not like you're starting fresh. But
that's right.
What's top of mind for 2020 for you?
Well, we have a lot that we're going to be continuing with. We're going to be continuing with the adoption of our active transportation plan, which is the plan we've been working on as a joint plan with the Village of Pittsford to make walkability and bikeability within Pittsford not only easier but safer for all of our residents, and to carry on with our sidewalk projects. The weather just prevented us from completing the East Avenue sidewalk, which will connect from the Village all the way to the Brighton Town line. We're almost at the Brighton Town line, but we can't pour concrete now until this spring. So we will finish that up then. And it will be as a result of the active transportation plan, we'll be talking about what comes next as far as sidewalk projects go, because those are things that are important to people in the town. Because we've adopted our comprehensive plan, we will now turn to the task of revising the town code to comply with some of the mandates in the comprehensive plan for, we could spend all day talking about what it calls for, but among the things it calls for is ways to preserve greater ways to preserve open countryside by having, more setbacks from main roads where development does come in that last 9 or 10% of the town that can be built.
What do you hear most from residents asking town government to take care of?
To take care of traffic problems and roadways. I put money in the budget, which was approved by the town board. We first put it in last year, and it stepped up road repaving program throughout the town. And also traffic safety issues. I don't know what the reason is, Evan. I am simply aware of the fact that over the course of the last 2 to 3 years, driving habits of people, and it's not just Pittsford. I've talked to other town supervisors. It's everywhere. Driving habits of people in residential neighborhoods have become much worse. Speeding, not observing stop signs, and I'm not talking about rolling stops. I'm talking about people blowing through stop signs at full speed, which is absolutely hair-raising. And one of the things we're going to be doing is taking a comprehensive look at traffic safety in the different neighborhoods. When these things come up, I typically will call a neighborhood meeting to describe to the residents what are the things we can do, which in the case of a town road, we have fairly broad discretion and don't have to ask permission of the state or the county, and are very interested in finding out what will the neighborhood support. Some neighborhoods, at the end of the day, when they hear what we can do, they say, well, we don't really like any of those things. We'll leave things as they are. Other neighborhoods want a much more aggressive approach, and our goal is to accommodate what they need.
Does everybody want sidewalks? Is that how it usually works?
It seems to be cyclical. For example, there are neighborhoods where, again, it was before my time, I'm told, 15 years ago or so, the town came to them and said, well, what would you think about a sidewalk here? They said, no, 1,000 times no. Now some of the same neighborhoods are back saying, please put in a sidewalk. And I think that this actually reflects a phenomenon we were talking a bit about earlier. So when I was talking about where the affordable houses are, new housing, because of the underlying value of the land, builders can't build a new house and not lose money on it unless they sell it for less. They can't do it at less than about $375,000 in Pittsburgh, okay? For a single home. But the available houses, the houses where I said in the neighborhoods where we have that 26% affordability and half of them are under $250,000, those are in existing neighborhoods. So one of the phenomena we have seen is that that is precisely where the young families are moving in to Pittsburgh. And so I started getting a couple of years ago emails from people saying, you know, there's been a lot of turnover in our neighborhood. These are in the existing neighborhoods. We now have a lot more children and pets in the neighborhood because young families are moving in. And, you know, we think that you ought to think about putting a sidewalk in, or we want you to step up, you know, the number of stop signs or things like that. And that's when I first began to realize that, yeah, these neighborhoods are turning over in the normal course of time as people retire, maybe go to a retirement home or maybe move to Florida or wherever people go when they're ready to make a change from the house they've lived in for many years. And it's young families with young children who are moving in. So that, in part, I think, is driving the expressed desire for more sidewalks in town.
When it comes to green space and parks, what's the future of green space in Pittsburgh?
I think, again, I'll go back to our community survey. One of the issues that we brought up in there is we said, do you approve of expanding our green print? Remember, the green print was back in 1996 where the town purchased development rights to 2/3 of the then remaining farmland. And overwhelmingly, our residents said that they would like to see an expansion of the green print. 53% said they would support it without qualification. Another 23% said they'd support it depending upon how much it would cost us. If we did move forward and do anything like that, I would not agree to go forward with it unless we put it to a referendum for the finance, because I would want to know that the public supported it, because as the first time around, it would be expensive.
What do people most get wrong when they think about town government?
Oh, gosh. I think I would say they most get wrong what the jurisdiction of town government is over certain things. One of the perpetual frustrations as someone who is in a position of responsibility in a town government is dealing with state roads and county roads, and we have a lot of those in Pittsburgh. And we don't have any control over their maintenance or the speed limits or where the traffic lights are or what the timing is on the traffic lights. These are very practical, down-to-earth, very local concerns. And it's a terrible position to be put in to have to tell people, well, that's the state, because number one, you're frustrated you can't do anything about it. And number two, you feel like you're just passing the buck, but you're not, because the reality is you don't have jurisdiction over it. And that is why it's so important to cultivate good working relationships with other levels of government. And I think that we have, in Pittsburgh, my town administration and before that my predecessors have done a fairly good job of having good relations with the State Department of Transportation, for example. I meet with them fairly regularly, and just recently they came through with a number of improvements to pedestrian safety at certain pedestrian crosswalks that gave us problems, and with improvements of certain stretches of roadway that, frankly, in my opinion, were well overdue for repair, and we've had a happy outcome with those things.
An email from Janice says, for your interview with the supervisor, I am very interested in whether Republicans at the local level can help steer supporters away from an increasingly conspiracy theory-oriented way of thinking that demonizes the left and is promoted at the top of his party. During the local campaign, I saw Bill's supporters falsely perpetuating a narrative that his Democratic opponents were newcomers that were part of a nefarious outside conspiracy, among other things. And a theme of Bill's ads was, "We stand for Pittsburgh," which would seem to fortify a myth and, in my opinion, echoed a Trumpian America First theme. So she wants to know, can you help with that? Do you think that that's a problem?
This is the first I've heard about this conspiracy, so I guess I'd have to know more about it in order to comment. I do stand for Pittsburgh, and I do stand for our residents and their interests. That is what I was elected to do, to stand for the best interests of the residents of our town. I make no apology for it. I'm proud of it. And it is my role to do the best I can for every resident of the town. And that's what I intend to keep doing.
I think some of what Janice may be touching on. Well, by the way, she's referencing the America First theme. Do you have a problem with the theme America First? Not that you've adopted it yourself, but do you have a problem with that theme?
Yeah, I do, for a lot of reasons. First of all, historically, it refers back to what historically was an unsavory movement back around the time of World War II. But quite apart from that, I don't think it's a useful way of thinking. I think, respect for human beings first is the way we need to think. And certainly this is the way that I have tried to conduct, in as modest way, business of our town. And I think there's a lot more good that comes from that than thinking of America first or anything else first, rather than the serving the people who elected us to serve.
The Pittsford Republican Party platform during the campaign echoed a lot of the themes that you've mentioned this hour. It had the following, quote, "We are committed to maintaining the character of Pittsford, the Pittsford we chose to live in, the Pittsford we chose for our children to grow up, the Pittsford we chose to retire in. We chose a unique community of quality. Our candidates plan to keep it. If you don't want to move out of Pittsford, don't let Pittsford move out from under you," end quote. It was that last line that sparked some complaints. I had a couple of emails from people who live there who thought, well, what does that mean? If you don't want to move out of Pittsford, don't let Pittsford move out from under you. Can you elaborate on that? What's the change that you think people feared the most or were concerned about the most?
I don't know. But I think that people know they like the place, and they know that they like the way the town services are, and they know they like the way they can communicate with local government. And I think they would consider it a loss and a downgrade if things like that were to change. I think also that we have done a very good job over the years in terms of those things that in a different sense keep us an attractive community. For example, historic preservation has been something that Pittsford has done with a considerable amount of success, especially in our village. And that a lot of credit goes to the village government for that. And in the preservation of green space. And people value those things, and they feel it contributes to the quality of life, and it does. But here again is just to touch very lightly on what we were talking about in the first half hour, here again is a conundrum, Evan, because communities that do a good job of historic preservation and preservation of open space, there is a discernible effect in those communities. And one of the effects is that tends to push up the value of housing, not just in the historic district or in the areas surrounding the preserved open space, but across the board. And we have seen that in Pittsford. So, people have to, again, you make certain choices in policies, and they have certain outcomes. And it's a question of what does the community support in terms of those outcomes.
You could have a lot more widely affordable housing if you just opened up all of your open land.
Well, that can't happen. That is
right. But the point being there is that those yes. choices have been made for various reasons over the years to preserve that space.
They have.
To cultivate the environment and the green space.
That's right.
And one of the results is as you see it, the housing stock and the prices.
Well, that's true. Talk to anyone who's familiar with historic preservation. This is a discernible effect. And in terms of preservation of green space, of course, it has that effect in another way as well. Because what are you doing when you're preserving green space? What are you doing? You're taking off the table the basic raw material of building.
Supply and
you
demand.
Are making the remaining land that much more valuable and that much more expensive.
But when you, as we kind of get ready to close the hour here, I've got a few emails I can't get to, but so from some listeners who frankly are African American, they hear you say we are committed to maintaining the character of Pittsford. They see a town that's only 2% black, and they think, is that a coded way of saying, we want to stay mostly white. We don't want people of a certain kind here.
No, it most definitely is not. It is a way of saying we think the people who live here love the place. We are going to keep up those things that attract people to the town of Pittsford, that attract everyone, regardless of your ethnicity or your religion or any other personal characteristics. This is something that is across the board. And people vote with their feet, as President Reagan famously said. And people view Pittsford as a place that is so desirable to live. And again, a lot of the credit for that goes to our school district, that they are willing to pay a premium to live in Pittsford. So in one sense, that's actually a very good thing. That's actually a very good reflection on the town and on the administration of the town and, of course, in the school district of the town. It does have the effect of making things more expensive.
In our last 40 seconds or so, in the next 2 years, you will look back and say, I was successful if what?
I will say, I was successful if we have maintained our quality of life, maintained our quality of services, maintained the fiscal responsibility that makes Pittsford the only town in all of upstate New York, any place north of Westchester County, that has a AAA credit rating, the highest credit rating. We are the only one north of the Westchester and Putnam line. And it will be a successful 2 years if we are able to carry on with the kind of environmental initiatives that increasingly have defined what we've done in town government that result in action that's in the best interest of our residents.
We know your calendar is packed, and we always appreciate the time.
It's been a pleasure, Evan. Thank you.
Bill Smith is the supervisor of the town of Pittsford and won a re-election by about 15-plus points 1 month ago on Election Day. We appreciate that, and we'll continue these conversations as well. Short break, more connections coming up.